Well, welcome to iPharmaRx, where we explore the evidence that matters to ambulatory care pharmacy practice. My name is Stuart Haynes, editor-in-chief of iPharmaRx, and today we're going to be talking about self-monitoring of blood pressure. The most recent ACC-AHA guidelines for the management of high blood pressure in adults strongly recommends that patients should engage in self-monitoring, and practitioners should use this information to guide treatment decisions. Now, there's a growing body of literature to support this recommendation, including a recently published study, the Tasman H4 study, which stands for telemonitoring and/or self-monitoring of blood pressure and hypertension. The study was published in March 2018 in Lancet, and joining me today to talk about the Tasman H4 study are Vicky Shaw and Daniel Longyhor from Wilkes University Nesbitt School of Pharmacy in beautiful Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. Dr. Shaw practices as a clinical pharmacy specialist at the Wilkes-Barre VA Medical Center, and Dr. Longyhor in an internal medicine primary care practice with St. Luke's University Hospital. So, Vicky, Dan, welcome to the iPharmaRx podcast.
Thanks for the invitation.
Thanks, Stuart. It's great to be here.
So, before we get started, I want you to imagine you're seeing LR, a 53-year-old Caucasian man, in the family medicine clinic today for a routine follow-up visit. The patient has high blood pressure and is overweight, but is otherwise healthy. He has a strong family history of cardiovascular disease. Both of his parents died in their 60s. His father died suddenly, presumably from an MI, and his mother had an ischemic stroke from which she suffered several complications and died of aspiration pneumonia. The patient has a 20-pack year history of cigarette smoking, but quit several years ago and denies using other tobacco products. He drinks alcohol most nights and likes to have, quote, a few beers when he's watching football and other sports, works as a long-haul truck driver, and is away from home 15 to 20 days each month. He checks his blood pressure at the grocery store every once in a while and bought a blood pressure machine some years ago, but he's misplaced it and it's somewhere around the house. Per the patient's recall, the readings at the grocery store are, quote, all good, usually like less than 140 over 80. The patient currently takes indapamide, 1.25 milligrams daily, and irbesartan, 150 milligrams daily, plus low-dose aspirin. Blood pressure today was 136 over 84 as measured in clinic, and he had a Chem-7 drawn this morning, along with an A1C and a lipid panel. The results, his electrolytes were all within normal limits, including his potassium, which was 4.9. Blood glucose was 104. A1C was 5.5. LDL 126. HDL cholesterol 44. And triglycerides were 85. So before we talk about the Tasman H4 study, I'm wondering what's going through your mind in a case like this. What additional information would you like to gather during this encounter? And what treatment recommendations, if any, would you make at this time?
So at this time, I think it's very important to learn how long he has had hypertension and how long he has received treatment. I'm curious to know what other medications he has tried in the past, and with those medications, why he was changed to different medications, or if it was treatment failure. Also, if there's any risks or signs of non-adherence. Also, just asking the patient with his current regimen if he's experiencing any issues at all. With the patient being a long-haul truck driver, it's important for us to also know the specifics of his diet and physical activity. We're assuming he has minimal physical activity and is eating a less than ideal diet because of his time on the road, but this may not be at all true. It's important to gain some perspective on who he is and where there are limitations in his lifestyle choices. And the last thing I would want to know is if 136 over 84 is standard for him, if this is his baseline or if this is normally lower or higher than what he sees. So we also calculated his ASCVD risk score, and that came out to be 6.3. He is at moderate risk, but at this time, statin therapy is not indicated.
So, Vicky, in the commentary you wrote for iPharmaRx entitled Hypertension, It's Time for Patients to Control the Wheel, you described the Tasman H4 study and the results. And so, for the benefit of our audience who may have not read that paper, can you give us a brief synopsis of the study methods and the results?
Sure. The aim of the study was to determine what method of monitoring would lead to a decrease in systolic blood pressure long term. This study was an open-label, randomized controlled trial done in 142 general practices in the UK with over 1,000 participants. The participants included in the study were hypertensive patients older than 35 years with a blood pressure higher than 140 over 90. Also, they must be willing to self-monitor their blood pressure. The participants were randomized into a 1-to-1-to-1 ratio into three subgroups. The first subgroup was a group that just did self-monitoring alone and then recorded their data on pen and paper. The second group was self-monitoring with telemonitoring, where abnormal lab values would be sent directly to the physician's office. And the third group was usual care in the physician's clinic. Every month, the physician would receive the data for self-monitoring and telemonitoring and make medication changes as needed. The self-monitoring alone group was provided a color chart to help them understand abnormal values, while telemonitoring group informed the physician of any abnormal values through SMS. Usual care patients were monitored in the clinic at their regular visits. The primary outcome was clinic-measured blood pressure readings at 12 months. What was discovered was self-monitoring, with or without telemonitoring, when used by general practitioners to titrate antihypertensive medication in individuals with poorly controlled blood pressure, leads to significantly lower blood pressure than titration guided by clinic readings.
So, Vicky, can you tell us a little bit about what you believe to be some of the key strengths of this study, perhaps some of the limitations? Are there any major sources of bias, confounders, or other threats to the internal validity of the study?
Sure. The strengths of the study included the large sample size with over 1,000 participants. It was a multi-center population, including 142 sites. The baseline characteristics among all three arms of the study were very well matched. And then the great thing is this is a relatively practical intervention, one that patients could easily implement on their own at home without intense training or specialized equipment. The limitations, however, include the study only looking at blood pressure changes and not reporting morbidity and mortality outcomes. With blood pressure only outcomes, we can make inferences about what will happen to these more concrete efficacy and safety outcomes, but this design lacks direct cause and effect relationships. Also, the outcomes were only measured at 6 and 12 months. The study population, though large, was primarily white ethnicity, which limits the generalizability of the study to other countries. Statistics were also not provided regarding participant adherence to study protocol, nor their health literacy. This intervention is only for those who need an improvement in blood pressure control and not for those who already meet their blood pressure targets.
So, Dan, as you know, the new ACC-AHA guidelines recommend a goal blood pressure of 130 over 80 for essentially everyone except for some frail older adults. And they also recommend that most patients engage in self-monitoring of blood pressure supported by telehealth technology. Clearly, self-monitoring appears to be beneficial, but do you think these findings actually support the notion that telemonitoring should be routinely used? Should all patients be monitoring their blood pressure? And if so, how frequently? And what are some of the best practices that you think there is in terms of storing and reporting and acting on the results of self-monitoring?
So I have to tell you, I'm not necessarily sure that this is an intervention for everybody, but I can definitely see self-monitoring and home blood pressure monitoring recommendations being used in a whole host of individuals. In fact, I think clearly about someone that I saw in our ambulatory clinic just recently, a gentleman who's on six different antihypertensives. And I think about someone like him who may have lower home blood pressure readings and may be suffering from some sort of white coat element to this entire thing. So do I see it for the 35, 45, 55 year old individual who has controlled blood pressure? Probably not. Getting back to what Vicky talked about, I see it more for the individuals who we either suspect have some element of white coat syndrome, or those that we just need to have a better understanding or get a better handle on what their blood pressure is doing to make them more aware of what's going on with their treatment. You know, second, the automated use of home blood pressures has been done a whole heck of a lot now. We've seen it in the SPRINT trial. Everybody was using automated blood pressure monitoring when they were in the office. What's kind of interesting, though, is if you look back at even just the introduction of automated testing, even in a clinic setting or an office setting, patients are going to routinely have lower blood pressures. And so where I think this home testing and even in-clinic automated testing is going to be of benefit is it can give us a real idea of what's going on with a patient's home blood pressure. Not to mention when we look at the predictive value of home blood pressures and in-office manual blood pressures, we're finding that home blood pressure readings are more predictive of cardiovascular and renal disease or cardiovascular and renal outcomes. So where I see this being used is we as clinicians can be advocating more for our patients to be checking their blood pressures at home and reporting back to help guide us on what we're supposed to be doing with their blood pressure regimen.
So, Dan, I have one last question. We've known for more than two decades now that self-monitoring can have a positive impact on health outcomes. And yet, most patients don't routinely engage in self-monitoring of blood pressure. And so the question is why? You know, I know that costs can be a barrier to some patients, but many of the patients own self-monitoring equipment but simply don't use it. Patients like LR. What can pharmacists and other ambulatory care practitioners do to engage patients and encourage them to use the equipment that they own?
You know, I think that this study and showing some of the positive impact on blood pressure that home monitoring can have is a great avenue for pharmacists or in the community or pharmacists in medical clinics to have that conversation with patients about their blood pressure. And they can advocate that the use of this type of technology can improve the readings that they're getting, and it can potentially improve outcomes. But again, we're going to need a longer study to determine if there are morbidity and mortality benefits that happen here. But I really do think the important thing is just having that conversation. Why aren't they doing it more? I think we need to educate them to do it. We need to make people feel comfortable that they can do it. And third, we got to advocate for patients to have access to these home blood pressure monitoring systems, whether it be advocating for third parties to cover them more or advocating for greater access through community health or other organizations. So I think what also is important is that we as clinicians, however we're involved in the patient's care, tell them how we're using this information. We show them that we're using this information in our decision making and that what they're doing at home isn't just some sort of futile practice that doesn't mean anything. They're actively involved in their care and we're looking for their input to help us better take care of them.
Well, Dan, Vicky, I want to thank you both for joining me today to discuss the treatment of high blood pressure and patient management strategies that get patients more involved and get them to goal. It's clear from your comments that you believe that home blood pressure monitoring has an important role to play in the management of patients, and that we need to be inquiring about the results of home blood pressure monitoring during each and every patient encounter. Well, tell us what you think. Only iFormRx members can leave comments and use the interactive features on the site. You can become a member of iFormRx. It's free. Sign up today. And be sure to sign in every time you visit. Well, until next time, this is Stuart Haynes, editor-in-chief of iFormRx, signing off.